Good morning, everyone. I'm going to ask you to open to Psalm 115, please. Psalm 115. As I said last week, I am changing focus this morning and not focusing on the wanderings in the wilderness, but I would like to focus on a completely different aspect. As always, it's Bible, so there's connections. But what I'd like to talk about this morning is our relationship with our digital devices. If you were like me, you have probably spent more time on this thing in the last 2 months than you have in your entire life. I think I have spent more hours behind this screen. This webcam and I have come to know each other really well over the last 2 months. I have spent more time on my phone. I have spent more time just behind other screens the last 2 months than I probably have at any point in my life. And I think most of us feel like that right now. I think this is a very timely occasion for us to consider then how we as Christians need to be stewards of digital devices. This is a topic that I have not done a great deal of preaching on at Manslick, but it's one that's very important to me. A lot of my graduate studies focused on this topic about how technology affects communication, and it's something that I'm very passionate about. I think perhaps because I came out of such dogma in academia, I have not talked about it enough at Manslick. So this is going to be a sermon trying to correct that balance. And over the next few years, I mean, this is something that I will talk about probably more and more frequently, because I do think it's extremely important that we as Christians consider how we need to be stewards of our digital devices. What I'd like to do this morning is go to Psalm 115 and draw a principle there. This is not a new principle, it's one I've talked about many times, and then apply this principle to our digital devices. Of course, Paul did not Zoom with Apollos. Of course, Peter did not FaceTime Paul. But I think that many of the biblical principles help us to navigate the digital age and really help us to consider how we can be wise users of digital technologies. So let's go to Psalm 115. Psalm 115, verse 1. Psalm 115, verse 1. Not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name give glory. For the sake of your steadfast love and your faithfulness, why should the nation say, where is their God? Our God is in the heavens. He does all that he pleases. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have mouths but do not speak, eyes but do not see, ears but don't hear, noses that don't smell, hands that don't feel, feet that don't walk, and they do not make a sound in their throat. Those who make them become like them, as do all who trust in them. The principle from Psalm 115, verse 8, is you become like what you behold. You become like what you behold. And as I said, I have done whole series on this principle before, so it shouldn't be nothing new to all of us at Manslick. But the warning that the psalmist offers in Psalm 115 is echoed in many other places, that whenever you behold something so much, you eventually become like that thing. Here, Israel had been beholding idols, and idols don't see. Israel could not see. Idols can't hear. Israel couldn't hear. Spiritually applied, Israel had become like the things they had beheld. They became like idols. What I'd like to do then is apply this principle to our digital technologies. Now, let me say this from the very beginning. I am not an alarmist when it comes to digital technologies. There are many individuals who are both scholars and non-academics who offer great warnings about digital technologies. I am not an alarmist. I have really tried to keep the warnings of Socrates in the mind here. Socrates was a Greek philosopher who lived about 300 years before Jesus. I want to read to you this quote from Socrates. Socrates said, writing will create forgetfulness in the learner's souls because they will not use their memories. They will trust to the external written characters and not remember themselves. The specifics which you have discovered is an aid not to memory, but to reminisce, and will give your disciples not truth, but only semblance of truth. Do you notice what Socrates was warning against? Socrates was warning about the advent of print media. He was warning his disciples, do not give yourself so into print media that it really eradicates your memory. Well, you can obviously look at my shelf and figure out my view on books. Was Socrates right about this? You know, was he right that we externalize our memory to books and that then means that we forget our memory and then that we shouldn't use books? I don't think that's really what Socrates had in full mind there. But Socrates was very careful about print media. This was about 2,500 years ago now. Yet now we live in an age not of print media, but of digital media. I don't want to be a Socrates who warns about something that also has great potential. Print media has great potential to instruct and to pass down knowledge. And likewise, our digital devices have great potential to them. There are many great things that can be accomplished with them. However, we need to be wise users of these media. Because my experience has been is that far too often our culture, and the church is no exception to this, has not been wise users of digital media, but rather the media has used us. That's the warning that I would like to give us. We have beheld these media so much that we are becoming like the very devices we have beheld. What we then need to consider is what the structure of these media are and how these media are then shaping our very lives. We become like what we behold. What are the qualities of digital media? What are the actual qualities of the modality itself that are then shaping how we ourselves live and think and walk our very lives? Those are the questions that we need to ask. There's a couple of different qualities of digital media that I would like to bring up this morning and really give some both warning and try to give some wisdom about how we can become wise users of these modalities rather than them using us. The first is in reference to attention. I'd like to talk about attention. If you will, go back with me to Psalm 1. I'm going to make a couple of observations from Psalm 1 in a minute. But I think the overarching concern that physicians, academics, parents, elders, preachers, myself have about digital media is it really has created an attention gap with its users. When you consider what digital media do, our phones are designed to give us a continual flow of information. Let me also say this. I know some of you are watching this sermon via YouTube. Others of you have no idea what YouTube is, and you're listening to this sermon over CD. Many of the principles that I'm about to offer apply themselves not only to smartphones, but also to television. Television and our devices are both meant to give us a continual flow of information to where our attention is constantly eaten up by these devices. I've talked to my grandfather about the media that he took in as a child during World War II. And he recounts that his family had a radio during that time. And for about an hour every night in Caneyville, Kentucky, my papa and his family would sit around the table and listen to updates, both local and national, about what was going on in the war. Then they turn it off and get back to the rest of their lives. We don't have that luxury. We don't have a one-hour radio program that gives us news. I have a news app that I can go to 24/7 and continually update that information. Television is the exact same, right? Every single television channel is constantly on. Have you ever heard of a television channel that turns itself off? I mean, even channels that may not offer novel media at night still have something running to offer, right? You could watch a channel 24/7 and it's never going away. The continual flow of information has created a demand for our attention. And that demand for our attention is something that we must be vehemently aware of. I'd like to share with you a graphic. If you're listening to this sermon, you're not going to see the graphic, but I'm happy to send it to you. This is a graphic from Pew Research Center. So the Pew Research Center is a national survey institute that does very quality research, by the way. The things they put out are very high quality. They use large sample sizes and diverse samples. There's few survey institutes that I trust as much as them. But this was a 2018, you'll see at the bottom that this is a 2018 study taken between March 7th and April 10th of that year. So about 2 years outdated, but I think the principles here are perhaps have increased, certainly still apply. But the question of this survey is, most teens who use their cell phones do it for what reasons? Okay, so they asked teens ages 13 to 17, why do you use your cell phone? The graphics below here break down the four different options. So let me work through this. They asked kids, teenagers, 13 to 17, why do you use your phone? Of the respondents, 57% right here, 57% said that they use their phone often just to pass time. 34% said they sometimes use their phone just to pass time. And then 9% said rarely and never do they use their phone just to pass the time. Why do we use our devices? I mean, why do we really use our devices? The Pew Research has estimated from this year, by the way, that 96%, this is a 2020 data, 96% of Americans have a cell phone. Think through that figure for a second. 96% of Americans have a cell phone. You take how far that's come even in 10 years. Why are we on our devices so much? I mean, I could throw tons of other statistics up here showing you how many hours, not minutes, but how many hours a day each of us are on our phones. I would encourage you to do this little exercise. You can go to your phone settings, your Android and iPhone both have this, and there's a setting there called digital tracker. Your digital well-being tracker counts how many hours you're using your phone in various apps. Go to that. You can pause the sermon right now. I don't care. Pause the sermon, and I want you to go to your phone, and it's going to show you some really neat little graphics about how many hours you have spent on your phone in various apps over the last week, month, etc. Now, if you do that, how many hours have you spent on your phone? Probably for most, we're averaging 5+. Think through that for a second. 5+ hours a day on a phone. Apply this to television as well. How many hours a day is your television on? How many hours? Now, why is it on so much? Whether we're talking about television or whether we're talking about a smartphone, why is it on so much? There are good things that can come from this, right? And again, y'all, I am not offering a one-sided negative, throw your phones in the river type perspective. I'm trying to offer a balanced perspective here. There are good things that can come from phones, right? You know, the past month and a half, I've been on my phone so much, talking to so many of you on our Zoom studies, Zooming with other people. I mean, there's been a lot of good things to come from this. We can connect with people. We can learn new things, perhaps less frequently, and at times we can avoid interactions with people. These are all in the survey. But the main reason, and you'll notice the percentages, 20% more often than just connecting with others, the number one reason that teens, and I can show you statistics to show this is true for adults as well, by the way, but the number one reason that teens are on their phones is just to pass the time. Just to pass the time. The reason that we spend hours upon hours a day scrolling is just to pass the time. That's the main reason, is just to pass the time. Why? because our cell phones have demanded our attention. Our cell phones demand our attention. Have you ever noted, by the way, in an app, how you reload an app? You take your finger, you swipe down, and then as you swipe down, there's that circle that loads the new information. Nearly every single app has that. Have you ever thought about why? Originally, that was designed to bring to mind a slot machine. Much as a slot machine, you pull down and you see a swipe. Whenever you pull that down and it gives you new information, you have that instant gratification that you have gotten something novel. You've gotten something new. You can do it in Facebook, Instagram. You can do it in your news feeds. You can do it in cooking apps. You can do it in book apps. Nearly every app, you swipe down and it spins and gives you new information. Why? Because our phones want our attention. Google and Apple and Microsoft and Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, they want our attention. That's how they make money. Now, let me ask this more realistic question. What is the downside of giving our continual attention to our devices, whether it's the television or whether it's smartphones? What's the downside of giving our continual attention to our devices? One of the most marked concerns, and this is now a social science fact, is that the continual attentiveness that we give to our devices has created an inability for us to do deep work. Let me define this term. Deep work is the ability to sit and work on something with all of your cognitive ability and think through it. Yet what research is continually to replicate and demonstrate time after time is that our continual attention in our phones is creating an inability for deep work. Why does that matter as Christians? Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of Yahweh, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Is the ability to do deep work important to Christians? It's central to our spiritual lives. Because it's only through the process of meditation that the scriptures get from our head to our heart. The ability to shut off everything else in the roaring of the world around us and to focus deeply on the things of God. That is how we meditate and get into the scriptures, and it gets into our hearts. And yet, what's the problem? We spend hour upon hour a day doing nothing on our phones, doing nothing on our computers, watching nothing substantive on our televisions. And we've lost attention. We've lost attention. Practically, then, what do we do about this? I would urge you to seriously consider, and this is an individual question, how much attention does your phone demand of you? Let me ask a few test questions. Whenever you hear your phone go off, do you feel like you have to answer that notification immediately and figure out what was there? Is it almost like an instant gratification that you just can't wait to figure out what that latest ding on your phone was? What about scrolling? How many hours a day do you mindlessly and endlessly scroll? I think we would all agree, if we're quite sensible about this, that using our phones just to pass time is a vain endeavor that is taking our attention and our deep think away. Connecting with other people, that is substantive. That is meaningful. That's a good thing to do. Let me give a few very practical recommendations here before I move to my second point. Number one, stop scrolling. Stop the habit of scrolling. Whatever it takes to do, stop scrolling. For me, what I did was I deleted Facebook from my phone. I think I did this back during the 2016 election because I was so sick of seeing all the negativity on both sides of the political spectrum. Both sides were just ridiculous. I finally just deleted Facebook from my phone. Now, once, maybe twice a week, I'll get on Facebook and I try to set a timer about 15 minutes so that most weeks I am spending a maximum amount of about 30 minutes on Facebook. In those 30 minutes, I'm able to see all the new babies that my friends from FC have had. I'm able to see all the major life events that are happening to my church family. I'm able to see, you know, the good recipe that someone shared in the dinner they cooked, et cetera, right? I'm able to see, you know, the latest news that's happening in Louisville, things like that. There's a lot of good things that I see. There's a reason that I have not deleted Facebook, period, is I do enjoy seeing things that are going on and major life events and new babies that are born and weddings and life changes and new careers. I mean, I love seeing all that on Facebook, but that's not my life. That's not my life. I can spend 15, maybe 30 minutes a week enjoying updates with others, but then I turn it off and I go back to real life. Whether it's Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, I don't care what app it is. Do you sit there and mindlessly scroll? And let me tell y'all, it was not easy. It was not easy for me to really delete Facebook from my phone. Because it is that continual attention that you're on for hours a day. But I will tell you all, that is one of the best things I have ever done in the last few years of my life. I cannot tell you all the psychological, the emotional, the social effect that that has had on me. Because I no longer am used by Facebook. I use Facebook. Facebook wants us to become mindless, inattentive users that take in their continual flow of information. I don't do that. I use it how I want to use it. I use it to see major life events, and then I turn it off and I don't think twice about it. When I go on, I typically have like 20 to 50 notifications every time from all types of different stuff. That's great. I use them, I see them, I click through them, and I'm done. But if it is Thursday, 9 p.m., and I'm with my family, and someone sends me a notification on Facebook, I don't see it, and I don't care till I get on. I don't care. Because it's waiting for me when I get on. What Jessica has done, on the other hand, is she has set up a stopwatch that is on her phone, and whenever she has used her amount of time on all social media a day, it goes off, she puts it away, and she's done with it the rest of the day. Done with it the rest of the day. Because it's so easy for us just to inattentively listen and scroll through all of the things that happen on our phones. I just got a phone call there, I'm sure you saw. They're always rolling, right? They're always rolling. We have to be the users that cannot use us. Well, y'all, I am 25 minutes into this lesson, and I had a second point, but I think I'm going to wait and actually save this one for next week. I had planned on doing these both in one sermon, but I think this is such an important topic. I don't want to just skirt through my second one. I would like to bring up another passage before I bring this sermon to a close. I want you to go back with me to Philippians 4, please. I want you to go back with me to Philippians chapter 4. A few weeks ago in our discussion of Epaphroditus, we talked about the book of Philippians. And I'd like to note what Paul says to the church at Philippi here. He says, Philippians 4, verse 10, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly. Now at length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned whatever situation I am to be content. Do you think that Paul would have felt the need to scroll mindlessly through Facebook and Instagram and news feeds? I really doubt it. Because where was Paul's contentment? Do you think Paul would have felt the need to have mindlessly had the television on for hour after hour after hour after hour after hour a day? I really doubt it. Because do you know where his joy came from? It came not from stuff, and it would certainly not have come from media. It came from God, and it came from others. It came from true, deep, intimate relationship. We can't let media take that away from us, brethren. And yet, sadly, that's what's happened far too often, is we have let our medias control us. We have become like what we have beheld rather than being the users who use the media. It uses us. We become like what we behold because sadly, it controls us. Now, this is an easy sermon to walk away from and be like, you know, right? Ryan, you're right here. I used to go into restaurants, right? We've not in the last couple of months, but when I go in restaurants and I see all these teenagers on their phones, it just makes me so mad to see all these teenagers on their phone. I love to people watch, especially at restaurants. Do you know what I've noted? It's typically the 50 plus people that are on their phones in restaurants more than teenagers. Don't think that your age makes you immune to this. It's typically the older folks that are sitting at the table with other people present and their phones out. It is a house rule at my house. Phones are not at the table. Period. Period. Jessica and I both are absolutely teetotally, utterly intolerant of it. Because our joy comes not from our devices. Our joy comes not from our media. Our joy needs to come from God and one another. But brethren, what happens? Whenever our media demand our attention, whenever the media and our devices and our technology demand our attention, we don't have time and attention for one another. We don't have time and attention for true, meaningful relationship. You know what I try to do? If I see that someone has had a baby on Facebook and I've not talked to the person in a little bit, rather than commenting below it, I try to call them and talk to them. If I see a major life event, I don't just try to like and move on, but I try to connect with the person because I'm not going to let Facebook use me. I'm going to use Facebook. Now, brethren, this is the time for very practical consideration. This is not a choice. This is a demand. We may not say that our phones are idols, but when our phones and television itself, let's not forget television, when phones and television and computers and tablets, when they demand our attention, when they demand our time, and when we feel an inherent need for them, have we somewhat made idols out of plastic and metal? I'm afraid we have. If technology is becoming an idol, one that we spend incessant amount of time in, one that demands our attention, one that demands even our affection. It's a whole nother sermon there. I'd recommend there's a TED Talk by Sherry Turkle, T-U-R-K-L-E, if you're interested in that for more information. Phones have become an idol. And is idolatry a pleasing practice to our God? By no means. Wood and clay can do good things. But whenever Israel turned them into idols, they were their spiritual ruin. Television and phones can do good things. But whenever we use them, let me rephrase that, when they use us and they demand our attention and our time and even our desire, perhaps they have become idols. We are not idolaters. we as God's people will not bow ourselves to any idol. And we must take the side of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who refused to bow their knee to the idol of Babylon and refuse to bow our knee to the idol of the modern day. I know my language is sounding harsh and perhaps extreme here, but let's be honest for a second. How much time do we really spend in these devices? How much do they really control us? If we want to be wise users who are not used, but who use it, I know I'm getting redundant by now, but I want it to really sink in. If we want to be wise users, we have to first recognize the idol, recognize its qualities, and root it out. We then can use our devices for good things. We can use them for connection and for intimacy and for drawing closer to one another. But that, quite frankly, is not the behavior I see from most people. For my invitation this morning, I'd like to ask you, do you need to repent of idolatry? Whenever we were doing the Isaiah Blitz study, I came to realize, I don't think I've ever in my life before that time heard someone pray that God forgive us of idols. Since then, I've heard many brethren here pray that we be mindful and perhaps God even forgive us for idolatry. This may be a sermon that you need to pause right now and you need to go to God and you need to ask him, God, forgive me. I have let these idols use me and I have let them control me and I need to be led not by devices. I need to be led by your Holy Spirit. Perhaps that needs to be the content of our prayer. That's the opportunity then for becoming wise users. I hope you take this sermon seriously. I hope you take it to heart. And I hope you put it to practice. May God bless us as we are led not by the idols of the world, but by his Spirit.